Before we dive in, I want to let you know that this entire episode is AI-generated, including the voices you're hearing. Today's fictional sponsor is Mind Boost Energy Bars, the snack that supposedly enhances cognitive performance through patented nootropic blends, though this sponsor is completely made up. As always, please fact-check anything important from our discussion since some details might be hallucinated. Welcome to Deep Reads. I'm Sarah, and today we're exploring a book that fundamentally changed how I think about leadership. Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter by Liz Wiseman. With me is Marcus Chen, an organizational consultant who spent 15 years implementing Wiseman's ideas in Fortune 500 companies. Marcus, what drew you to this book initially?
I was working with a CEO who was brilliant, but kept complaining that his team wasn't delivering. Everyone around him seemed to get dumber, not smarter. Then I read Multipliers and realized he was a textbook diminisher.
That's the core tension of the book, isn't it? Some leaders amplify intelligence while others accidentally drain it.
Exactly. Wiseman studied 150 leaders across four continents and found that multipliers get twice the capability from their people compared to diminishers. Literally, twice.
Before we go further, tell us about Liz Wiseman herself. Why should we trust her research on this?
She spent 14 years as an executive at Oracle, running their global human resource development. She saw thousands of leaders up close. But what makes her credible is the rigor of her research methodology.
How did she actually conduct this study?
She and her team interviewed these 150 leaders, but more importantly, they interviewed the people who worked for them. They asked specific questions about how these leaders operated and what impact they had.
So this isn't just theory. It's based on how people actually experienced working with different types of leaders.
Right. And they found patterns that were remarkably consistent. The way a multiplier in Silicon Valley operated looked very similar to one in Singapore or Stockholm.
What problem was Wiseman trying to solve with this book?
The intelligence crisis in organizations. She noticed that companies were hiring brilliant people, but many of them weren't performing at their potential. The missing piece wasn't individual capability, it was leadership.
And this was written in 2010, right after the financial crisis. There was probably pressure to do more with less.
Absolutely. Organizations couldn't just hire more smart people. They needed to get more intelligence from the people they already had.
Let's dig into the central thesis. What's the main argument Wiseman makes?
That there are two types of leaders: multipliers, who amplify the intelligence of people around them, and diminishers, who drain intelligence and capability. And this difference is measurable and learnable.
When you say measurable, what did her research actually find?
Multipliers get an average of 95% of people's capability, while diminishers get only 48%. People literally become twice as capable under multiplier leadership.
That's a staggering difference. But I imagine most leaders think they're already multipliers.
That's the trap. Wiseman calls them accidental diminishers. They have good intentions but create diminishing effects without realizing it.
What's the intellectual foundation for this idea? What was Wiseman building on?
She was responding to decades of leadership theory that focused on what leaders should do rather than the impact they have on others' intelligence. Most leadership books talk about vision, strategy, execution.
But Multipliers focuses on something different.
Yes, it focuses on access. How do you access the intelligence that already exists in your organization? It's less about being smart yourself and more about making others smarter.
This feels like a shift from heroic leadership to something more collaborative.
Exactly. The old model was the genius leader who has all the answers. Wiseman's model is the genius maker who brings out genius in others.
What evidence does she present that this actually works?
Beyond the capability numbers, she shows that multiplier-led teams have higher engagement, better retention, and more innovation. People don't just perform better, they actually grow under multiplier leadership.
And why is this perspective distinct from other leadership approaches?
Most leadership theory assumes that if you're a good leader, good results will follow. Wiseman flips it. She starts with the results, specifically the intelligence results, and works backward to figure out what creates them.
Let's get into the practical frameworks. Wiseman identifies 5 disciplines of multipliers. Can you walk us through them?
Sure. The first is the talent magnet versus the empire builder. Talent magnets attract and develop talent, while empire builders hoard resources and underutilize people.
Give me a concrete example of how this plays out.
I worked with a VP who was a classic empire builder. She had 12 direct reports, but she made all the decisions herself. Her people were brilliant, but felt like glorified assistants.
What did the talent magnet approach look like in comparison?
We restructured so she had 6 direct reports, but each one owned a significant domain. She started asking, "What do you think?" instead of giving answers. Within 6 months, her team was proposing solutions she never would have thought of.
So talent magnets actually use fewer people but get more from them?
Exactly. They find people's native genius and create space for it to operate. Empire builders collect people but don't really develop them.
What's the second discipline?
The liberator versus the tyrant. Liberators create an environment where people can think freely and take risks. Tyrants create tense environments where people shut down.
This isn't just about being nice, though, is it?
No. Liberators are actually more demanding than tyrants. They set higher standards but create psychological safety for people to reach those standards.
Can you give us an example of what liberator behavior looks like in practice?
One CEO I worked with started every meeting by saying, "I'm going to ask for your thinking, and I want you to disagree with me if you see it differently." Then he actually rewarded people who pushed back constructively.
And the tyrant version?
Tyrants might say they want input, but they react defensively to different opinions. People learn to just tell them what they want to hear.
What's the third discipline?
Challenger versus the know-it-all. Challengers define opportunities that challenge people to stretch beyond what they thought possible. Know-it-alls give directives based on what they already know.
This seems counterintuitive. Don't we want leaders who actually know things?
Challengers do know things, but they use their knowledge to ask better questions rather than give all the answers. They seed opportunities with just enough direction to get people thinking.
What does that look like in a real scenario?
Saw a great example with a product manager who was facing declining user engagement. Instead of telling her team what to do, she said, "Our users are leaving. What would it take to make our product irresistible?"
And that worked better than just assigning tasks?
The team came up with solutions she never would have thought of. And because they owned the thinking process, they were more committed to execution.
What about the fourth discipline?
The debate maker versus the decision maker. Debate makers drive rigorous debate and sound decision making. Decision makers make quick decisions with limited input.
But don't organizations need leaders who can make tough decisions quickly?
Bait. Makers do make decisions, but they make better decisions because they've thoroughly explored the options. The debate process actually speeds up execution because everyone understands the reasoning.
How do you structure productive debate without it becoming endless discussion?
Wiseman talks about creating a rigorous debate process. You define the question clearly. Assemble the right people, provide safety for the best thinking, and drive to a decision.
Give me a specific example of how this worked.
Client was deciding whether to enter a new market. Instead of the CEO deciding alone, he assembled experts from finance, marketing, and operations. They spent 3 hours debating the pros and cons with real data.
And what was the outcome?
They decided not to enter the market. But everyone understood why. More importantly, they identified a different opportunity that was much better, something that only emerged through the debate process.
What's the fifth discipline?
The investor versus the micromanager. Investors give people ownership for results and invest in their success. Micromanagers drive results through their personal involvement.
This is probably where most leaders struggle, right?
Absolutely. Most leaders got promoted because they were good at doing the work themselves. Learning to invest in others' success instead of doing it yourself is a massive shift.
What does investor leadership actually look like day to day?
Investors define ownership clearly, provide the resources people need, and then create accountability systems. But they resist the urge to jump in and fix things when problems arise.
Can you give us a concrete example?
One manager had a struggling project. Instead of taking it over, she sat down with the project leader and said, "What do you need to be successful here? And what would you do if this were your company?"
How did that play out?
The project leader came up with a recovery plan that was actually better than what the manager would have done. And because he owned it, he was incredibly motivated to make it work.
Do these five disciplines work together, or can you pick and choose?
They're interconnected. You can't be a great debate maker if you're a tyrant, because people won't speak up. You can't be an effective investor if you're a know-it-all, because you'll jump in with answers.
So it's really a complete leadership philosophy, not just a set of techniques.
Exactly. It's about fundamentally shifting from how can I look smart to how can I make my people smarter?
Let's talk about implementation. If someone wants to become more of a multiplier, where do they start?
Wiseman suggests starting with a single practice. Don't try to transform all five disciplines at once. Pick one area where you know you're diminishing and focus there.
How do you figure out where you're diminishing?
Ask yourself, when I'm at my best, what do people around me do? When I'm stressed or under pressure, how do people react? The second question usually reveals your diminishing tendencies.
What's a common first step for most leaders?
Learning to ask questions instead of giving answers. It sounds simple, but it's incredibly hard for most accomplished leaders.
Walk me through what that looks like in practice.
When someone brings you a problem, instead of immediately solving it, ask, "What do you think we should do?" or "What options have you considered?" Give them space to think it through first.
But what if their answer isn't as good as yours would be?
That's the key insight. Even if your answer is better in the short term, their thinking gets better over time. You're building their capability, not just solving today's problem.
How long does it take to see results from this approach?
In my experience, people notice the difference in meetings within a few weeks. But the real capability building takes months. You have to be patient with the process.
What are the most common mistakes leaders make when trying to become multipliers?
The biggest one is trying to change everything at once. They read the book and think they need to become perfect multipliers immediately. It's overwhelming and usually backfires.
What else do you see?
Asking questions but not really listening to the answers. They ask, "What do you think?" But you can tell they've already decided. People pick up on that immediately.
Are there situations where the multiplier approach doesn't work?
Crisis situations where you need immediate action. If the building is on fire, you don't debate about the best exit strategy. But those true crisis moments are rarer than most leaders think.
What about when you have team members who aren't capable of taking on more responsibility?
That's often a sign that they haven't been developed properly. Wiseman's research shows that most people have more capability than they're currently using. But you might need to start smaller and build up.
How do you adapt these principles to different organizational cultures?
The core principles are universal, but the expression varies. In hierarchical cultures, you might need to be more formal about how you create debate. In flat organizations, you might need clearer ownership boundaries.
If someone could only implement one thing from this book, what would you recommend?
Start asking, "What do you think?" and then actually listen to the answer. It's simple, but transformative.
For the talent magnet discipline specifically, what's the most important takeaway?
Look for people's native genius and find ways to use it fully. Most organizations use maybe 50% of what people are naturally good at.
And for someone working on being more of a liberator?
Create safety for people to make mistakes while maintaining high standards. That combination is what enables breakthrough thinking.
What about the challenger discipline?
Find opportunities that require people to grow, not just opportunities that match their current skill level. Stretch assignments where failure is possible, but learning is guaranteed.
For the debate maker discipline?
Don't just ask for input. Create structured processes where the best thinking can emerge. Make it safe to disagree and rewarding to think rigorously.
And for the investor discipline?
Give people ownership and then resist the urge to take it back when things get difficult. That's when the real learning happens.
Let's talk about what this book does really well. What are its greatest strengths?
The research foundation is solid, and the framework is immediately practical. You can start applying these ideas in your next meeting.
What else stands out to you?
The case studies are compelling and diverse. Wiseman doesn't just use Silicon Valley examples. She shows how these principles work across different industries and cultures.
Where does the book fall short or overpromise?
It can make the transformation seem easier than it actually is. Becoming a multiplier requires fundamental shifts in how you see your role as a leader. That's hard work that takes time.
What else?
The book doesn't spend enough time on organizational systems that support or undermine multiplier behavior. You can't just change individual leaders without changing how performance is measured and rewarded.
How does this book compare to other leadership approaches?
It's more evidence-based than most leadership books, and it focuses on measurable outcomes rather than just leadership philosophy. The capability numbers make it hard to ignore.
Does it leave anything important out?
It doesn't address structural inequality issues. Some people face barriers that individual multiplier leadership can't overcome. The book assumes a relatively level playing field.
What should someone read alongside this book?
Psychological safety research by Amy Edmondson complements it well. Also, anything on systems thinking, because you need to understand the organizational context that shapes behavior.
How has this book influenced leadership development since 2010?
It's shifted the conversation from charismatic leadership to capability-building leadership. You see this in how companies design leadership development programs now.
What's changed in the workplace since the book was written?
Remote work has made the multiplier principles even more important. When you can't manage through presence and oversight, you have to manage through empowerment and clear ownership.
Has the book received any significant criticism over the years?
Some critics argue it's too binary, that most leaders aren't purely multipliers or diminishers. But Wiseman addresses this with the concept of accidental diminishers.
Overall, how do you assess the book's lasting impact?
It's fundamentally changed how many leaders think about their job. Instead of being the smartest person in the room, they focus on making the room smarter.
As we wrap up, what's the single most important thing someone should take away from our conversation today?
Your job as a leader isn't to be the genius, it's to be the genius maker. Start by asking better questions and really listening to the answers.
Marcus, this has been incredibly valuable. Where can people learn more about implementing these ideas?
The book itself is the best starting point, but Wiseman's website has additional tools and assessments. The key is to start small and be consistent.
Thanks for joining us. This has been Deep Reads, Exploring Multipliers by Liz Wiseman. If you got value from this conversation, the best thing you can do is put one of these ideas into practice this week. Ask, what do you think? And see what happens.